This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. For decades, archaeologists have debated when humans first set foot in North America. Now, ancient footprints discovered in New Mexico are offering some additional clues as to when people first inhabited the continent we call home. The evidence could alter the widely accepted timeline for when humans first lived in North America by thousands of years. Some archaeologists are even calling this a bombshell discovery. Last year, I spoke about this with two scientists who've been studying the ancient footprints. Kathleen Springer and Jeffrey Pigotti are research geologists with the United States Geological Survey. I spoke with them last fall, shortly after their research was published in the journal Science. Because this is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought about our conversations. The email address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21st Show. Here now is our conversation about the discovery of ancient footprints and what it tells us about when humans first came to North America. Kathleen and Jeffrey, thanks so much for being with us on the 21st.
Great to be here.
Yep, thanks for having us.
Kathleen, let's start with these footprints. How old are they?
Well, they are between 23 and 21,000 years old. So we have documented human occupation in southern New Mexico for a full 2,000 years.
How does that fit with the timeline of when we previously thought people were living in the Americas?
Yeah, the most widely accepted idea is that people were here about 13,000 years ago, and those were called the Clovis people. There have been a number of studies recently that have challenged that and started pushing back 14 or 15,000 in terms of the arrival of humans in North America. But this study really makes a giant leap. And basically pushing it all the way back between 23 and 21,000.
These numbers are so staggering to think about. I mean, this is before Rome and Greece by millennia, right? I mean, by tens of millennia. Yeah. I mean, what was human life like? What do we know about what human life was like back at this time?
Well, what we know from the White Sands footprints from the paleoichnologists that were part of this international team, they study these trackways and they can discern all kinds of things about human behavior. And what they've, you know, interpreted is that the bulk of these footprints are teenagers and little kids, somewhere between 9 and 14 years old. And that's pretty remarkable. So there was like just a bunch of teenagers and kids playing around, kind of probably following the teenagers. The teenagers were probably helpers of, you know, the older adults, whatever they were doing. That hasn't really been discerned yet. But, you know, there's a lot of work still to be done. But the footprints can tell remarkable stories. There's other places in White Sands where they've documented the longest human trackway known in North America. It's a woman who's carrying a child. And they know that because she's got this unusual gait, because she's holding something. And then all of a sudden, what she's holding is set down, and it's a little kid. And the little kid walks along with her for a number of yards until the little kid gets tired and goes, "Mommy, pick me up." And she picks him up again. And it's all documented in the sand. It's shocking, actually.
Yeah. And I remember reading about that in the New York Times, and the sort of the kid dancing around. It really, you know, does sort of show a remarkable connection. It's something that any parent today would be familiar with.
Absolutely.
I seem to remember in that story, there were also evidence that a mammoth had been in the area and a giant sloth crossed the path.
Exactly. So there's other evidence. I mean, when you're out there, there's trackways everywhere. There's big mammoth tracks, and there's, you know, the sloth prints. And one of the studies is a full study where they show interactions with the sloth and the people, and the people were clearly spooking this sloth because he, you know, he gets up on all, you know, from all fours to the back, his back feet, and they show kind of the dance of the people messing around, I guess, with this sloth. They don't go as far as say that they were, you know, there was predation, but, you know, they basically are showing that the people were somewhat interacting with the sloth, or the sloth was just reacting to a band of people walking by him.
Yeah. And I one of the speculations I read is that this suggested that humans might have already been at the top of that particular food chain. What do you make of that?
Well, Yeah, it very well may be, yeah.
So Jeff, can you talk about how you got started on this project?
Sure. So as Kat said, there are trackways out here all over the place, as far as you can see, and most of them are at the surface. Trying to date a footprint that's already at the surface is really difficult, right? Because if you have anything to date, we use radiocarbon dating to establish these ages that we've been talking about. And to date something, we basically have to date layers that are below and above the trackway horizons, right? So that way we can constrain the age and stuff. So basically the idea was, okay, if we know these prints are everywhere, but they're at the surface, we need to be able to find them in the sediments, right? And so this particular area that we're studying is on the east side of a big lake basin. It's called Paleo Lake Otero. But basically there's a low, kind of a low angle relief where you can look at the layers of sediment, almost like pages in a book, oldest at the bottom, youngest at the top. And what our team was able to discern was that not only were these tracks kind of on the surface, but they actually extended into the sediments. And we used a technique called ground penetrating radar to determine that the tracks were actually in the sediments themselves. And so the idea was, okay, if that's the case, we need to dig a trench. We need to see these footprints in the third dimension. And we also need to be able to see if there's datable material above and below each of these trackways. And that's exactly what we did.
So how are you digging? I've got to imagine like an excavator or a machine like that would be much too damaging.
This is the craziest thing ever. There's no excavator. There's nothing like that. It is giant chainsaw, yep, that is about 6 feet long or so. And it's specifically for ripping through the gypsum sediments. And then we pull out blocks at a time. So it's one of the craziest things you'll ever see. But basically when we pull out the blocks, you pull out big blocks, they fracture kind of along bedding planes. And what we were really hoping to see came to fruition in that when we opened these bedding planes up, there were seeds. There were layers of seeds and plant material in between these trackway horizons.
So, and then it's the age of these grass seeds, I understand, that are what's being used to sort of date the footprints. There were some, I read one report where somebody said they kind of wondered if maybe, you know, some of these grass seeds could have absorbed water from a different layer. Maybe that would give you know, sort of a false impression of their age. How do you respond to that? How do you gain confidence in the dating that you're doing?
Yeah, we're actually very confident. So the idea that they're talking about is called the hard water effect. And basically it's old carbon in water that gets absorbed by the plants. And so the plants, if they absorb that old water, could give ages that are anomalously old, basically too old, right? So the way that we look at this is that, number one, the geologic setting is not correct for that kind of situation. We're basically, these people were walking around at the surface in this newly exposed lake margin, and we're stepping on the plants, right? So we're actually pulling some of the seeds right out of the footprints for dating. And then we know that based on other studies in the basin that the ideal material for dating, which is charcoal, gave the same ages as these seeds did in another part of the basin. So really what we're looking at is our seeds that are giving accurate ages for exactly what we're looking at, and that is the trackways there at White Sands.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about the discovery of ancient footprints by archaeologists that could push back the timeline for when we thought humans first inhabited North America. We're speaking with Jeffrey Pigotti and Kathleen Springer, both of whom are research scientists at the U.S. Geological Survey, who've been working on these footprints. Because we're taping ahead of time, we are not taking calls, but you can always email us. Let us know what you thought. Talk@21stshow.org is our address. Kathleen, I understand that global warming sort of played a role in allowing these footprints to be discovered. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, exactly. So Jeff and I are sort of, our stock in trade is that we go all over the American Southwest looking at ancient ecosystems and discerning how those ecosystems may or may not have responded to abrupt warming events in the geologic past. So, and we do this radiocarbon dating of these sediments that we look at all over the place. And what we have discovered is that many times in the late Pleistocene specifically, there were centuries long abrupt warming events that happened that were centuries long, essentially think of them as centuries long mega droughts. And they happened several times, and we have been able to document very finely that ecosystems were very responsive to those kinds of climatic shifts that were basically geologically instantaneous. And what we were so excited to find in these Lake Otero sediments is that we saw in this sequence that we're talking about that we dated, that there's lake sediments, and then all of a sudden the lake gives away to more sort of sand and alluvium that the people were walking on, which indicates that the lake levels were lowered and that there were big expanses of, you know, land that the people now could walk across and still get to the lake. The lake was still there, but there was large, you know, marginal areas now that the humans and megafauna could walk across and then ultimately be preserved in these layers for us to look at 23,000 years later.
Yeah.
So we like to say climate did it. You know, climate allowed this depositional setting to set the stage for humans and animals to you know, leave their footprints behind.
To leave their marks, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff, one of the common stories I think many of us learned in elementary school is that humans came to North America on a land bridge connecting Asia and North America. Does this change or complicate that narrative at all?
It certainly changes the timeline, right?
Yeah.
So during the last glacial maximum, which is this kind of this period that we're talking about, ice sheets basically block the passageways from Asia into North America. And so prior to this discovery, what basically people thought was nobody could get through until those ice sheets receded, right? Until they shrunk and basically people either came along the coast at about 17,000 years ago, or people came through what you're referring to as the ice-free corridor at about 14,000 years ago. But really the idea was that nobody could get there before that time period. What the White Sands discoveries tell us is that people were here before those ice sheets actually coalesced and blocked the routes. So it's a real fundamental distinction and change from what people thought prior to the study.
Jeff, you're originally from Central Illinois. I mean, I wonder, do some of these findings have implications for other researchers in other parts of the country, other parts of the world, as to what archaeologists are looking for?
Sure. One of the really exciting things about this is that this is a time period where in North America, archaeologists and other folks that are interested in these kinds of stories wouldn't look, right? Because it was just too early. And so now what we're really hoping is that researchers will kind of take another look at their sites, maybe look a little deeper in time, and possibly find something similar.
There's ice age lakes all over the American Southwest, mm-hmm. and looking for prints is something that I think people will be doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Kathleen, last question to you. Can you put this in sort of a context of sort of scientific discovery? Is this a once in a lifetime? How do you think this will be remembered?
It feels like that, you know, it really does. And you know, I'm not just talking about the buzz, you know, that's out there. It's, you know, it was, we feel really satisfied in what we did, because we feel like we really came up with a systematic method to really get at how old these tracks were. These tracks have been known in this park for a dozen years. And it's really neat to see it all come together and to have such an international team of people with all these different capabilities and expertise to kind of all kind of mind meld and to get at this question, not just studying the prints, which is crazy interesting, but getting at the timing of when the humans were walking around southern New Mexico. So it feels, and again, we're not archaeologists. We do geology and stratigraphy, and you know, but it feels like it's a really big monumental thing when you shake a paradigm up. It's you know, it's pretty exciting. Yeah.
Well, Kathleen Springer and Jeff Bugatti are research geologists with the U.S. Geological Survey. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your work with us today on the 21st.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for our program today. Tomorrow on the show, we're bringing back a pair of virologists we had on recently, taking more listener questions about the latest with COVID-19 and specifically the Omicron variant, vaccines, and what's happening out there. If you have questions and you want to submit them in advance in your own voice, you're welcome to do so. Send us a voice memo to talk at 21stshow.org. That's talk at 21stshow.org. You can also just call and leave us a voicemail anytime, day or night, 24/7. It won't wake us up. It always goes to voicemail. 217-300-2121 is the number. 217-300-2121. All that information, every way to contact us, it's all at our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.